Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
The Big Chief with a badge, a cattle prod and a head on a stick.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the Great Dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham as we take another step closer today to finding a new Prime Minister in the second ballot of Tory MPs in Westminster this very afternoon. By 6 o'clock, we should know who is most likely to stand up against Boris Johnson. Will it be rock and roll Remainer Rory Stewart? Will it be jumping Jezza? Or could Go Go Gove make a late change? It seems that Sag has fallen by the wayside, along with Robot Rab, who hasn't floated anyone's boat whatsoever. The most disturbing news that came in late yesterday was that Theresa May's closest ally, David Lington, was backing Remainer Rory, with the inference that the former Prime Minister would be doing the same. Yet more evidence that she really never wanted to leave the European Union after all. We'll be checking in with Talk Radio political editor Ross Kempsall throughout the show, and of course we'll be talking to all manner of pundits as well, and politicians, and of course you. 0344 499 1000. First though, we're going to get stuck into education. As thousands of children up and down the country prepare to take their exams, GCSEs and otherwise, because we are finally confronting the truth that has for so long been unspoken. And that truth is this. Two-thirds of disadvantaged children in this country are actually white British. And everyone knows why that is. We have hundreds of communities that have been ignored, abandoned and frankly forgotten about as local councils and national governments have chosen instead to champion ethnic minorities and diversity in an effort to win brownie points and money for their causes. Thankfully, Education Secretary Damien Hines has noticed and is going to do something about it. He made a very interesting speech yesterday and we're going to be examining it and finding out precisely what it is all about. 0344 499 1000. We'll also keep you abreast of developments in the arrest of Michel Platini, the former head of UEFA, the former French national football captain, of course, a great footballer, a great football administrator, and in his time, he's been arrested over corruption claims about the awarding of the 2022 World Cup to Qatar. We'll find out later whether or not there's likely to be any more arrests and precisely what is going on. Coming up later on as well, we'll find out how you can heat your home with cheese and just how dogs manage to manufacture their puppy eyes expression to make us love them even more than we already do. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, right here on Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, the front page of the Daily Telegraph this morning, mystery of Stewart's past links with MI6. It's not much of a mystery, to be honest, because Rory Stewart's father was in MI6 and had quite a firm grasp of running MI6 for quite some time. Rory Stewart, of course, was in the armed forces as well. Famously, he went to Afghanistan. He smoked opium, but it didn't have any effect on him. He ran into a woman who he employed with her husband in his charity. Strangely enough, there was a bit of a mystery because he ended up walking away with her and the husband's not very happy. Lots of things about Rory Stewart are quite interesting, quite colourful, but he's not prime ministerial material, surely. Let's talk to Tobias Elwood, Conservative MP for Bournemouth East. Perhaps he can convince me of something different. Tobias, a very good morning to you.
Well, good morning. I'm not sure you can be convinced. I mean, you've got yourself into a whirlwind there of reasons why you can't support somebody. What I see is our party is not in a good place. Just look at all the election results that we've had recently. Look at the polls. And what we've seen here is somebody that's actually electrified this campaign, talked about issues other than Brexit, but including Brexit, and allowed us to speak beyond our own echo chamber. This has been quite exciting and actually liberating in a way to say, here is somebody that actually can stand up and challenge Boris, can actually be that sparring partner that can raise the bar of and elevate this. So we can look to the nation and say, here we are, road testing and actually showing policies that could excite the nation and allow us to continue to earn the right to be number 10.
Well, what I would say to you, Tobias, is the reason the Tory party is in the mess that it is in is because it's failed single-handedly to deliver Brexit. And one of the reasons it's failed to deliver Brexit is because Theresa May kept presenting the same old deal, dressed up as a new deal, three separate times. Rory Stewart wants to deliver it a fourth time, so I don't really see what's new about that.
Right. I agree with the first part. I disagree with the second part. The first part, you're absolutely right. If we do not somehow resolve Brexit this autumn, our party will die. It's actually suffocating our party. It's suffocating British politics as well. People are so fed up that we've not resolved this 3 years almost after the referendum. So I agree with you on that point. The second piece is to do with the actual process itself. It comes in two parts. The first is the divorce. How do you separate yourself from the EU? The second piece is the future relationship. Now, actually, all parties, and indeed Boris, everybody has actually voted to support the withdrawal agreement. The piece that has been difficult has been the Northern Ireland backstop. Where people differ is what happens next. What is our future trading relationship? And what's happened is that people couldn't agree where Theresa May wanted to go with that futures trading relationship, so they didn't support part one. They didn't support the actual divorce proceedings. What I hope we've learned, if anything, because we got trounced in the Euro elections and the local elections, is that we must come together and unite around a workable compromise that will actually honour the referendum result, but leave us with a working relationship with Europe. And that means avoiding no deal, because no deal is not a solution for Britain. It's actually dangerous. It would damage our reputation. It would damage the prospects of Britain's economy. It would actually see...
How do you know that?
Well, because all the analysis has actually been done right across the piece, independent as well as government, say that actually we would take a hit. The question is how big that hit is. And I'm quite prepared to say Britain is a strong economy, fifth in the world and so far, that in the longevity, we could possibly recover. But it's a bit like saying we deserve rightly to be in the Premier League of in countries doing trade. And instead, we go outside, put some goalposts up using our shirts and play a kick around. It really is taking us to a very base level of trade. And nobody in the world really does that. It's all to do with trade relationships and moving it.
So you would rather stay in an arrangement for trade in which we have no power, but that we are dictated to by the European Union?
That's not true. We would not have
power.
Well,
that's Theresa May's deal. That's her deal.
No, it's not, because she's not even discovered. That's the whole point. You know, the mistake you're making is to look at the withdrawal agreement, which only talks about how we depart. So, for example, medical records being recognised on both sides, or educational qualifications being recognised on both sides, citizens' rights being recognised on both sides, movement of goods recognised on both sides. That's actually allowing us to continue working. Okay. The second piece is, okay, how do we then trade in the future for that? And that's the big question mark, how close that relationship is.
Do you know what? I'm going to stop you here, Tobias. I'm going to stop you here because we've been arguing this point, right, for 3 years. OK, we are nowhere nearer the point of agreement. So there is no point in you trying to convince me of something which you are hopeful of, as against me, who I think actually a no-deal Brexit is no different in a way from a deal with the European Union, because in the end, a lot of it is still about negotiation. Tell me more about why Rory Stewart is different from Theresa May.
No, I can't do that, because you're saying you support no deal. So you need to tell me how no deal would benefit Britain.
Well, what I'm saying to you is...
Make the case to me. Persuade me that you think no deal would...
I could do, but, you know, the listeners are bored stiff listening to people trying to persuade each other who don't agree about this.
It's really important that we understand the consequences of no deal.
All right, let me tell you this, then. Well, you asked me to explain it to you, so let me explain it to you. Let me explain it to you, then you can come back to me. Here's the point. If you have a deal of some kind, it will not be finite, will it? It will not cover absolutely everything. So therefore, you will still have to negotiate parts of that as you go. For me, all a no deal means is that you leave the European Union and then you start negotiating. And that's as simple as that. And there are plenty of people who will tell you that that will not cause a problem, including the guys that run the ports in Calais.
Yes, of course, and they want business. What will the EU do, which is what they say they do, if we go to no deal? What would you do with the $39 billion? You'd hang on to that?
Yeah, why not?
Right. So, okay, because the first thing that the EU would do is not actually engage in any future discussions about a relationship.
Of course they would.
They said so, officially.
Oh, right, and they don't ever take negotiating positions and then change them.
No, no, no. The reason why they won't is because until they will take us to court, because we've already legally said we would pay £39 billion. So they won't negotiate, even in good faith, what the future relationship will be until we've sorted the money issue out. And whilst that happens, then the financial services, of which we could arguably say we're the strongest in the world, would then suffer. Pharmaceuticals would suffer. Creative industries would suffer. Everything would suffer because, you know, 50% of our trade continues.
Most pharmaceuticals are now manufactured in India and the United States of America. Okay,
They may be manufactured there because of the pricing, but the companies, the best companies in the world that are doing the investigations and the research, are here. In
yeah, but Tobias, yeah, we'll get nowhere with this. You're here to tell me.
Financial services,
hang on, you're here to tell me why.
When it comes to life sciences, when it comes to military policing, or indeed intelligence, when it comes to oil and gas, we lead the world. We are European or global leaders. But that will suffer if we go to no deal.
Well, how will it suffer if we're still in NATO, for example? How is that going to be a problem?
Because we lose the threat picture. We're part of 40 organizations or initiatives across Europe that allow us to understand the movement of danger. As soon as we go to no deal, we automatically...
That's rubbish. That is nonsense. Every single military person I speak to says that that is completely the opposite case.
I'm telling you that it is, and I work in the Ministry of Defence. That is the case, that how it works.
Really?
That is what will actually happen.
Why don't you tell me, Tobias, instead of arguing about the same... This is why your party is going down the toilet, Tobias. This is why your party is not being voted for, because all you do is talk in circles and ever-decreasing circles about what a terrible thing it will be if we leave the European Union. The people voted to leave.
Wrong. OK? I did not say we shouldn't leave the European Union. I make it 100% clear that we should leave the European Union. I'm with you on that.
Did you vote to leave in the referendum?
Hold on to your seat and let me finish my sentence.
I'm holding on to my seat. There's no need to be rude to Bias. Did you vote to leave?
I'm just making the
case. Did you vote to leave in the referendum?
It doesn't matter.
No, it does matter. Did you?
Yes, it does. Again, let me finish the sentence.
So you didn't vote to leave then?
I'll explain.
Go on.
I voted 3 times to leave the European Union. I want to see us leave the European Union and honour the referendum. The fact that people like yourselves continue to go back and label
people... What do you mean people like yourselves? What do you mean by that?
Because you're going back and labelling me and actually...
I'm asking you which way you voted,
that's
all.
Because of what I did.
I'm asking you which way you voted.
Many of my colleagues, and this is recognised right across the piece, and indeed in Parliament, everybody recognises that the best thing for Britain is to honour the referendum and leave the European Union. Where you and I disagree is on how we leave. I want a constructive relationship with Europe. I do not want to see
Britain's
reputation internationally down. Yeah, but you're arguing for no deal, and that's where you and I disagree.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean it's wrong, though. It's a difference of opinion. You're making out that you know best and that only you have got the answer. And unfortunately, people like you, and I'm going to use that phrase now, who are willing to sell Britain out to the rest of Europe and get a deal which nobody wants in this country, which has been defeated three times.
You've not asked me what deal I want.
You want Rory Stewart's deal, which is the same as Theresa May's deal. Isn't it?
Then I'm trying to explain that actually Theresa May's deal, through the Brady Amendment, was actually supported by a majority of people in Parliament. Where there was a difference of opinion was to do with how to deal with the backstop. So the fact
it was voted down 3 times, Tobias. How was it supported?
Because when the withdrawal agreement was put through, but minus in the Brady Amendment, minus the backstop, it passed. So 95% of the withdrawal agreement is accepted as the basis of how you do the arrangements of the divorce from the EU. Where there is difference of opinion, and you've just illustrated it now, is what our future relationship will be. You're content with no deal. I'm saying I'm not content with no
right.
deal.
Okay, well, now, let's move on from this.
I'm not going to say you're wrong. Perhaps that was... I forgive me if that's impression. That is your opinion, and I respect your opinion.
See?
I will argue to say, though, that from my perspective, from where I see the stats I see, that a no deal, firstly, wouldn't actually honour the referendum results, because it would be mission creep. I don't remember anybody talking about that.
Yeah.
And secondly, I think we can do better.
All right, okay. Well, let's move on to that, because that's the important part now, because you believe Rory Stewart should be the next Prime Minister of this country. How is he going to present Theresa May's deal and whatever comes after it as any different from what she did, because she lost it 3 times? How is he going to be any different?
Well, unfortunately, the numbers went down. So we were minus about 40 or so support to get the actual withdrawal agreement across. And as I say, that's just phase 1. Phase 2 is the future relationship. So where Rory Stewart wants to actually go is to say, let's look at what it was in phase one that prevented us from getting it across the line. Unfortunately, many people just simply didn't want to support Theresa May because it was Theresa May's deal itself. It does require all of us. And I think there's been a bit of a wake-up call in my party to say, if we do not honour the referendum result this autumn, if we do not clear up this issue to do with the Brexit, then our party will be out. The Brexit party will grow and we'll probably end up with Labour, with Corbyn. We're nationalising our industries.
Yeah. And that's where you're taking it.
Getting rid of our nuclear deterrent. That is what will actually happen.
Yeah, but because of your inability to unite around leaving the European Union as a party, that's what you're going to deliver us. So the Tories will actually bring us Jeremy Corbyn. And I will never forgive you for that.
Well, all the more reason why what has happened during this leadership campaign, and every single leadership contender came into Committee Room 14 and said two things. Firstly, we need to unite and look like a united party so we actually can earn the right to stay in number 10, because we look fragmented, we look disjointed, we do not look like we're in touch with the nation. And secondly, we have to resolve Brexit. So people need to stop being so anchored to their pure version of Brexit. And there are many others who join with you to say no deal. But no deal will not get through Parliament. Parliament has already actually put laws against it to say we can't do that.
But that's because Parliament's full of people like you who don't want to leave the European Union.
How many times do I have to say it? I honour the referendum result. We should leave the
European
Union.
You don't really want to leave the EU, though, do you?
We need to leave the EU. There's no
you don't believe
question
that.
About it.
You don't believe it. I don't mind, Tobias, if you don't want to leave the European Union. I wish you'd just be honest about it instead of filibustering
everything. You're now trying to take me down an avenue which I think is unhelpful. Every Democrat should recognise the result of the referendum. That's the world I'm in.
I'll tell you the world I'm in, Tobias. The people outside of the Westminster bubble see what's going on inside the Houses of Parliament and see what you are all doing. And you are absolutely and utterly, at the very least, postponing, filibustering, wasting time and trying against hope, that you will go on for long enough that the people will change their minds. That's what you do.
I agree with part of that and I disagree with the very last bit. You're absolutely right that we've done a bad job at trying to resolve Brexit.
Bad is an understatement.
Well, ultimately, if you go into any pub or indeed any family, you're going to find different views on Brexit, and the same has been in Parliament. What we need to do is for people to recognise they will not get their pure form of what they want. Okay, some are calling for a second referendum. Some are calling for a Norway model. Some are calling for Canada Plus. Some are calling for no deal, as you advocate as well. Nobody is going to get their pure form. It has to be a compromise and a recognition that unless we resolve this soon, not only will it damage the party, but it's actually damaging the country. Right. It's costing us.
Well, let me ask you one final question, Tobias. Wouldn't it be more sensible for the Tory party to unite behind Boris Johnson, even if you find that distasteful, because he is by far and away the best chance you've got of winning a general election and actually making Brexit happen, rather than a sort of joke figure on the sidelines who walks around as if he's somehow reinvented the wheel?
So you want a coronation, do you? You just want... We tried that last time with Theresa May, OK? We need to road test the contenders, and we need to road test their policies. The best way to do that is to have a full campaign. And the person, whether you like him or not, who's electrified this campaign and taking it way beyond our own echo chamber, which you rightly mentioned, the Westminster bubble and indeed our own party, has been Rory Stewart. I like the idea of this big beast of Rory Stewart and Boris Johnson, for everything he stands for. I work for him in the Foreign Office, actually going out there, putting the case forward as to why the Conservative Party needs to reform, re-engage, modernise and move forward. That's what this whole exercise should be about. The idea that we simply just turn around and say, over to you, Boris. Let's see it.
Okay.
Where has he been?
Let me ask you this then. Well, let me ask you this, Tobias.
If
Boris wins, if he wins, which he's more than likely to do, will you then rally behind him?
Well, if everybody is calling for unity, of course we need to support the prime. Again, going back to the
yes is a very easy word. You can just say yes.
I can say yes. I can do, but I'm also allowed to explain the yes, if that's okay.
You're on.
Well, the answer is yes. The short answer. The second is, that is the democratic process. That's the purpose of actually having a system that takes us to two candidates and then we work out who the final one is. And then, quite rightly, if we don't unite for the very points that you make, then our party is on the demise and we will see Jeremy Corbyn in number 10. Mm. And that cannot be good for Britain.
It can't. That we can at last agree on. Tobias, thank you very much indeed. Tobias Elwood, Conservative MP for Bournemouth East, who thinks Rory Stewart should be the next Prime Minister. That pretty much leaves me speechless, really. What do you make of it? 0344 499 1000. We'll take your calls next.
A mid-morning dance with the devil.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
On Talk Radio.
Coming up later on this afternoon, 6 o'clock to be precise, we will find out exactly who is going to still be left in the Tory leadership race. Ross Kempsel has joined us now, our political editor. Ross, very good morning to
you. Good morning, Mike.
Rory Stewart, still very much the sort of coming man, if you like, the guy who everybody's talking about. Boris Johnson, still very much far out in the lead. What are you hearing?
Rory Stewart presents himself as the change candidate, as a disruptor. It's true that he has taken at least 4 to 5, we think, MPs who have publicly declared with him since the second round. He's a hugely long way to go, though, because you need 33 MPs to make the cut today. So if you don't get 33 MPs, you are out, regardless of how many MPs you get under that number. So we could see more than one candidate eliminated from the race today forcefully. That's on top of the question is whether any will drop out,
yes,
either before or after, as soon as they realise that they haven't done the job, or later tonight. Now, there is a provision, of course, for a third ballot tomorrow. Why would you bother entering the third ballot and force the voting process into Thursday on the fourth ballot if you knew that there is very little chance of you getting through? There'll be huge pressure this evening after the BBC TV debate at 8 p.m. For those candidates to eliminate themselves if they have no realistic chance of going forward in order to get this process done tomorrow rather than bringing it into Thursday.
Right. And you're right to say that he has kind of presented himself slightly, or slightly misrepresented himself in a way, because he's producing a plan which would involve resubmitting Theresa May's original withdrawal agreement, right? And he's not actually calling for very much different at all.
So Rory Stewart is, definitely has an insurgent or a disruptive campaign, in the sense that he wasn't well known before outside of Conservative politics, and he has damaged the campaigns, I think particularly of Sajid Javid and Michael Gove, by being a figure who sort of more liberal-minded Tories can come towards. And of course, most importantly of all, damaged Jeremy Hunt, who really has suffered because of Rory Stewart's campaign. But when you look at Rory Stewart's record, important to remember, he has been a minister in Theresa May's government. He was given a cabinet job because he was the one of the few MPs who would go out on broadcast and defend Theresa May's deal, come what may, morning, yes, noon and night, whatever criticism was made of it, when nobody else would, frankly, or very few other people would. He voted, it said that in the first round, Theresa May voted for him. That's been a rumour that has been going around and has been reported in Westminster again. So it looks as if he's Theresa May's chosen candidate, according to some. And Theresa May's deputy, David Lidington, publicly supports him. And David Lidington is known as Theresa May's brain, if you like, inside government. He and Theresa May are very, very close indeed. So I would imagine that there is this sense on the Tory backbenches, picking up pace, that Rory Stewart is the Maturian candidate, if you like. He's the candidate who is standing in place of Theresa May in this competition. Now, of course, he is going to deny that. He's going to say that he's all about change. But it's totally clear that the deal would be resubmitted under Rory Stewart. Boris Johnson swearing, on the other hand, that he will change it. Whether that's possible or not, who knows?
And so outside of Rory Stewart, who would you say is the most likely candidate to get the most votes? Is it Gove then? Because, as you say, Jeremy Hunt seems to have kind of shot himself in the foot and then kind of compounded it by agreeing with Donald Trump about Sadiq Khan, which wasn't his greatest move, I don't think. And the others have all just kind of disappeared into the oblivion. Dominic Raab, I think it was too early for him, wasn't it?
So on first round numbers, we would expect Michael Gove to go through today, although his campaign has really been harmed. And Tory MPs have been telling me all week that they thought he did pretty badly in that TV debate on Sunday evening. So if Michael Gove hemorrhages some votes, it's not entirely impossible that he'll go out, although I'd expect him to go through. I would expect Jeremy Hunt to make the cut as well. So I would expect you to have Boris Johnson, Jeremy Hunt and Michael Gove at the moment going through on the numbers that we've seen. But let's say this is all speculative, and as a proviso. Sajid Javid, on the other hand, fallen well behind. If he's benefited from Michael Gove and Matt Hancock's supporters, plausible that he stays in, but a lot of ground to make up. Likewise with Rory Stewart, more ground to make up than people seem to be suggesting. Although there is this suggestion now that he's going to have been lent enough votes that he'll squeak through over the 33 Mark. That's key for Rory Stewart because that gets him in the BBC TV debate tonight.
I was going to say, yeah, tonight could be interesting. I mean, a lot of people saying if it's Rory Stewart versus Boris Johnson and maybe one other, will Boris Johnson pull out? Because he might not wish to be subjected to a kind of grilling by Rory Stewart, hypocritical or otherwise.
Yeah, I think it's too late to pull out now. So it will look tactically bad for Boris Johnson to pull out at this stage, especially considering he didn't do the previous TV debate. So yeah. I think he's probably crossed that bridge. Nothing's impossible. The key point to remember is if you don't make it through the second round today, so if you don't get 33 votes, then you're not in the TV debate tonight, the BBC TV debate. So if Rory Stewart does make it through and if he squeaks over the line, it's a great victory for him regardless of what happens. He'll almost certainly be knocked out on Wednesday, but it means he has his moment in the spotlight on national television criticising Boris Johnson, which is what he really wants to do politically.
And what does that mean for his long-term ambitions within the party, within the cabinet and all the rest of it?
So he's clearly pitching himself, I think, not as a new leader at this stage, but definitely as a leader on the back benches of opposition to a government under Boris Johnson. So that's the most likely role for him to play. He'll become a lightning rod figure for supporters on the back benches. He has 10 or 11 now who are publicly declared, who are along the same lines as him on Brexit. And he will become a mouthpiece, essentially, and a leader on the back benches against Boris Johnson's policy. So he's the kind of person you're going to expect seeing standing up in the end of October when Boris Johnson's going to the House of Commons and either saying we're pushing ahead with no deal or we've got these changes. Rory Stewart will be the figure who will stand up and who will publicly criticise the new Prime Minister strongly from the back benches. It's kind of Dominic Grieve type role. I think he's going to inherit that role and he will be a figure who those kind of individuals coalesce around in the Conservative Party.
Okay. Ross, thanks very much indeed. Voting starts this afternoon. The result comes at 6 o'clock. We'll bring you that live as it happens, of course, right here on Talk Radio.
More blasted rhetoric from the Banana Republic for people who think capital punishment isn't going nearly far enough.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham
on Talk Radio.
This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. You know what to do. 0344 499 1000 is the number to get your voice heard, because we are, in many ways, the voice of the people here at Talk Radio. Steve says, what a great caller Daniel was. The same values as me and millions of others. When my wife had her son, she has not worked a day since, but I was doing 80 hours a week. What did the Tories give us? Nothing. What did they take away? Child benefit, because I earned too much. Well, the Tories have turned into a very odd party over the last sort of 10, 20 years. I mean, George Osborne is still managing to reach his kind of, you know, a cold, dead hand into the wallets of various people who are supposedly Tory voters of middle class, who are having to pay a lot more tax now than they used to, because George Osborne, apparently, as a Tory Chancellor, thought it was a good idea to tax people more, the more money they made. It's not very Tory of him, is it? Let's talk to Mark Fennells, QC, criminal barrister at 23 Essex Street Chambers, former chair of the Criminal Bar Association. An interesting story today has crossed our desk, in which it says that around about 112,000 offenders per year are avoiding a criminal record for offences including possessions of weapons, cruelty to children and theft, because they're saying sorry and they're being let off. What is going on? Mark, a very good morning to you.
Morning, Mike.
Thanks very much for joining us. We've had the National Police Chiefs Council in touch with us, but funnily enough, because one of the highlighted areas in this report is sex offenders. But apparently, you know, things that are categorised as rape and child sex offences, many of them are involved in sort of teenagers, if you like. So a 14-year-old sleeping with another 14-year-old. So I can sort of understand why that might not be prosecuted in quite the same way as it would be if it was a genuine, you know, sort of 30-year-old having sex with a 14-year-old. But the rest of it seems as though there's a reluctance to prosecute, doesn't it?
Well, there's a wider story here, Mike, and if I can just explain.
Yeah.
Back in 2011-12, the Crown Prosecution Service was prosecuting about 900,000 cases a year across the country. In this year, they're down to closer to 500,000.
Okay.
Which is a huge drop.
That is, it's almost 50%, isn't it?
Exactly, and that's from their own figures. There is nobody who thinks that crime's gone down in that time. And crime is a blight on all our communities across the country in every kind of way and shape and form. And the police in the same period have had about 20% of their budgets cut.
Mm.
The consequence of all of this is that they've got a different set of priorities, and they've been trying where they can to divert people out of the criminal justice system. They've been trying to avoid prosecutions where they think it's sensible. And I'm not saying they're right or they're wrong, but I'm just trying to describe what...
But it is an actual policy, in other words.
I think so.
Yeah.
And so what happens is that wherever they think they can sensibly keep somebody out of the justice system, they do. They're trying to juggle our priorities. They're trying to deal with knife crime. They're trying to deal with the most serious sex offenders and terrorism when it happens, all those kinds of really serious things.
Sure.
And it's all because the justice budget is not protected. While everything else is protected, justice is not. And so the cuts have been really severe over the last decade.
And so does it mean as well that, you know, this is a sort of it's a shortcut, if you like. And it may well be, as you say, it's hard for us to say whether it's right or wrong. It may well be sensible not to doubt and sort of overload the justice system. But it doesn't sound right somehow.
Well, Mike, I think that the key to doing it is that these community resolution orders are a good thing if they're used properly. But there's a big if in that, isn't there? The first thing is, we all think that if you've got a kid who's 12 or 13 or 14 and they've done something stupid and they're not going to do it again, if we can keep them out of the justice system and stop them being criminalized, that's probably a good thing.
Right.
Let's say if there's a fight in a family and some 20-year-old hits, you know, a cousin or something,
right,
and it's the first time he's done it, and nobody wants to complain and nobody wants them to have a criminal record. If it's a one-off, that's fine. Maybe it's the right thing to keep them out of the justice system. But I think what needs to be done is to make sure that this is only ever done where the victim consents. So the person who has been the subject of this assault says, I actually think this is a good idea. And I think we've also got to try and find a way to make sure that police forces are as consistent as possible. Because a lot of the reports around the country over the last 24 hours suggest that different police forces use these at very different rates. And as soon as you get inconsistency, people don't think that's fair.
Yes, I think that's right. And also, looking at some of these figures, it's not always the case, perhaps, that these are, you know, one-off incidents or opportunities, perhaps, to stop someone from going into the criminal justice system. Because, for example, 3,555 burglaries, 309 aggravated vehicle theft, 1,720 cruelty to children, 151,000 theft offences. You know, generally, I would make a wide sweeping statement here and say people involved in burglaries and aggravated vehicle theft are probably recidivist criminals.
I completely agree with you. And the public needs to start asking its politicians and police officers why we are not doing enough to make sure those kinds of cases are investigated and prosecuted. And that's something where we've all got to put pressure on our politicians and say, and our police forces, and say, why can't you do it? The police will probably say, because we've been cut so much over the last few years and I have to put all my resources into, for example, knife crime or whatever it is. But that's a big question for all of us. I think that the other thing, if I can just say this, is that if you do keep people out of the system with one of these, we need to make sure that the information is properly recorded by the police so that they know if that person comes back, they can say, you've had your chance, you're not getting another one.
Mm. That's right. And so, I mean, how much of this is about money as well? Because presumably, as you say, the resources are limited, but not just in the police service, but what about in the judiciary as well? Because we're hearing all the time that criminal barristers are not getting paid what they should. Many people who are working for legal aid are getting very badly paid indeed. Is it something? Is that part of it as well?
It's all part of it. It's all part of the fact the justice budget has been cut by so much since the crash of 2008. And while other parts of the country's budgets are protected, the justice is not. Now, maybe I've got a skin in the game here, an axe to grind, but I think if you're talking about a civilized country, the things that ought to be protected are the health system for your family, the education system to give your kids a chance, and the justice system so that you can look after your own rights in your own position.
Yeah.
If somebody takes something from you, or you've got a dispute with your neighbor, or whatever else it is, you should have fair access to justice, which gives you a chance to make sure that, you know, nobody's going to ruin your life.
No, exactly.
And it's looking after the justice system and understanding how important it is that's something we've got to reverse after the cuts of the last decade.
Right. And is there any evidence that they can show us, or is it too soon, that their policy is working, if you like? Like, for example, if they are, you know, dismissing a few of these claims and a few of these charges, that actually that person then becomes a sort of reasonable citizen?
I don't know about that. You'd have to ask the police. I think a lot of us have got a general concern that the police are just trying to cope and they don't actually ask the right questions about their own information and their own data.
Right.
So can I give you one other example?
Sure.
A few years ago, The bail rules were changed so that people couldn't be left on bail endlessly during investigations. And now the police use something called remain under investigation instead.
Right.
And nobody knows how many people are out there just languishing, being investigated, quote unquote.
Right.
And nothing ever happening with their cases
right.
at the end of the day.
Well, I know from my own personal experience of people that were bailed, newspaper people who had been arrested
exactly.
and charged with, or not actually charged at all with anything, but investigated over the, you know, the sort of the blagging and the phone hacking stuff and all that. Many of them were never charged, but they were on bail for sort of over a year, some of them.
Well, there are lots of fraud cases out there, frauds involving tens of millions of pounds, where investigations have now been running for 4 or 5 years and they just get adjourned and adjourned and
right.
adjourned and adjourned. And they're not brought to an end because there's just so little money in the police systems and the Crown Prosecution Service too, which desperately needs more funding,
yeah.
To actually bring these cases and prosecute the people who should be prosecuted. It's taken us a bit away from your original question. These
well,
CROs
these things
are
never straightforward, are they?
No, everything's connected. These CROs are a good thing if they're one-offs, for kids who are not coming back into the system.
Yeah.
And we can actually use it as a way of saying, look, we don't want to be bothered with you. But as you rightly said earlier, if they're burglars who've done it before and are going to do it again, or they're, you know, the older bloke and the younger girl or whatever else, they should never be used.
They'll just take it as read that they can get away with it. That's the problem. Mark, thank you very much indeed. Mark Fennells, QC, criminal barrister at 23 Essex Street Chambers, former chair of the Criminal Bar Association. The problem here is that criminals will look for any excuse to get off what it is that they've been found guilty of doing, something that they could be charged with, something that they could end up going to prison for. And by just kind of saying, just say you're sorry, we'll let you off, I think they're going to take advantage of that massively, aren't they?
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
A mid-morning dance with the devil.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
On Talk Radio.
And I've got so little left to lose that it feels just like I'm walking on broken
land. A couple of you have been asking if we're going to put that Tobias Elwood interview out on Twitter. One part of it has gone out. I'll try and get the whole thing put up on YouTube, which is what we can do sometimes. And the bits out there at the moment says how Rory Stewart is electrifying the campaign. And Shana says, oh, Tobias, electrified is not the right word. If you want to see the Tory party go from crumbling to dust, then Rory is the man. Boris really is the only one who could possibly mend the party now, and he has until the end of October to do it. We're going to come back to the phones in a moment. Let's just have another listen to what Tobias Elwood had to say would happen, as he believes it, in the case of a no-deal Brexit.
When it comes to military policing or indeed intelligence, when it comes to oil and gas, we lead the world. We are European or global leaders. But that will suffer if we go to no deal.
Well, how will it suffer if we're still in NATO, for example? How is that going to be a problem?
Because we lose the threat picture. We're part of 40 organizations or initiatives across Europe that allow us to understand the movement of danger. As soon as we go to no deal, we automatically automatically
lose sight of that. That is nonsense. Every single military person I speak to says that that is completely the opposite case.
I'm telling you that it is, and I work in the Ministry of Defence. That is the case, that how it works.
Really?
That is what will actually happen.
Why don't you tell me, Tobias, instead of arguing about the same... This is why your party is going down the toilet, Tobias. This is why your party is not being voted for, because all you do is talk in circles, and ever-decreasing circles, about what a terrible thing it will be if we leave the European Union. The people voted to leave.
Wrong.
He thinks I'm wrong. I think he's wrong. What should we do now? Let's talk to Rudy in Exeter. Hi, Rudy.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Very well, sir. What do you want to say?
Well, I don't know what funny stuff he's been smoking, but at the end of the day, if he pushes through May's deal, his party is over. He doesn't get it. May's deal is not leaving the European Union. You know, I just don't know what planet these people are on. I really, really don't. It really frustrates me, you know. And he belittles the people that want to leave the EU. And what makes me laugh, the only people pushing Rory Stewart, and correct me if I'm wrong, are people that voted Remain.
That's right. And people who don't want to leave. But I wish they'd just admit that and go and join the Lib Dems and let's get on with it.
Exactly. Why don't they just do that, you know? And the thing is this, right? Like I said, right, to these other people, right, you know, all these people that won't have a by-election, people like, you know, Chakarumuna.
Oh, yeah.
If he says that, you know, people voted for me, not the party. Well, if that's the case, yeah, have a by-election and let them vote for you again.
And somebody showed me the results of that election the last time they had one down there in 2015, I think it was. 24,000 Labour, 4,000 Lib Dem. I don't think he wants an election anytime soon.
I don't think he wants an election anytime soon. And I don't think any of them do. And all I know is the writing is on the wall for the Tory party.
Yeah.
If we do not leave on the 31st of October without a deal.
Yes. I couldn't agree more. You're quite right, Rudy. Thank you. Stephen is in Maidstone. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Mike.
How are you doing? I'm very well. You want to talk about the justice system, I think.
Yeah, I do. I was listening to your lawyer sometime earlier.
Oh, yes.
And I couldn't sort of, couldn't come to terms with the fact that there's probably a generation between us. I joined the police force in 1966. And in those days, the main or my mentors had finished their service in the war. They were all big guys, came out, joined the police, and were advancing towards their pensions.
Right.
Now, I joined the section. I was 6 foot tall. I was the smallest man on the section. And I joined a police force. I didn't join a police service.
Right.
When offenders were arrested in those days, they had no choice, really. Every offender that came into the police station was either bailed with no further action or charged with an offence,
right,
if the evidence was there. There was no caution. A caution didn't exist.
Do you think it's more difficult now for some reason because of all the paperwork that they have to go through, and that's partly why they don't want to bother?
Well, can I tell you, Mike, that when I joined the CID and we had to do our own paperwork, our paperwork was submitted to an office manager. The paperwork was retained. When we went to court, the prosecutor was a superintendent of police. It wasn't a CPS. We appeared in court against the offender, with the prosecuting officer as the prosecutor. Under normal circumstances, a person would probably have three or four previous convictions,
right,
before he ever went anywhere near a prison. But the point I want to make is there was no suspended sentence either.
Sure.
So you've got the situation where no caution, no suspended sentence, and the offender had a chance after three or four convictions of going down.
Right.
And that was it. And they knew it, you know?
And it seemed like everybody knew where they stood as well then. I don't want to be one of those people who just says, oh, it was greater in the good old days and all that. But it certainly was much more straightforward. You know, you guys knew what you were doing. The police now, it seems to me, are not really trusted to do what they want to do. And instead, they have to kind of spend a lot of time fulfilling targets, you know?
Yeah, well, let me tell you, I worked in a naval town. probably most pubs of anywhere in the country. And the pubs used to turn out at 11 o'clock at night. This was before Tony Blair decided that everybody could drink all night.
Yes.
So at least you had an opportunity of half your officers going home after 1 o'clock in the morning and having a full complement of men for the day when things were happening. But, of course, this drinking thing started. And of course, now, yeah, they split the force so that half of them were up all the night because people were coming out of nightclubs.
Yeah.
You know, things like that.
Doesn't make it any easier to be a police officer. Listen, great call, Stephen. Thank you very much indeed in Maidstone. Let's go to Bill, who's in Faversham, wants to talk about MPs and politicians. Bill, very good afternoon to you.
Hi there, Mike.
How you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. This Brexit thing's running and running, and I was trying to sort of reduce it down to what's really going on here.
Yeah.
And I think what's going on is that people don't take things on the chin anymore. Something goes against you, whether it's in sport or politics, and instead of regrouping or trying to find what you can do better or accepting it, you say, let's go after the people that won that vote or this thing, and let's drag them down and try and make it. Let's have a revote until we get what we want. And I just think it's quite sad, actually, because they say economically we're not going to do as well. They don't know that. This has never happened before. We might do really, really well. Just accept the vote that's been had and get on with it like people used to do.
Yes, well, exactly right. And also, be honest about what you believe. I really am sick to death of hearing all these politicians saying that they voted to remain, or at least not even saying that they voted to remain, but now they're going to support the result of the referendum, because everybody knows that that's not what they're doing. They're still trying to stop it from happening.
Absolutely. And the trouble is what we're missing is authenticity. If a politician of any persuasion come along who was authentic, they would actually win everybody's vote, because it's like they're so phony. It's like, how high do you want me to jump? What do you want me to say so I can get power?
Right.
And it's pathetic.
I know. It really is, Bill. You're quite right. Gareth is in Manchester. Hi, Gareth.
Hey, Mike.
How you doing?
Yeah, fine, thanks. Yeah, I just want to say, all this talk about rehashing the deal, it's ridiculous. Why don't we just shred it? Start again with the deal that we write, not Brussels.
Yeah.
And we turn to him and say, look, that's what we want. You've got until the end of August to give us an answer.
Right.
And if you don't give us an answer, then we prepare for no deal and life moves on.
Yeah,
you know,
I think so. Up. Because, I mean, we can legitimately say to Brussels, look, the deal that you've given us previously is not workable. Nobody likes it. It's not going to get through Parliament. So we're going to have to start again.
Yeah, start completely again with it. You know, because we're a fair country. We'll be fair with Brussels. I don't think we'd come up with a deal that was, you know, ridiculously, you know, mess things up for them. We'd meet them in the middle.
Yeah.
You know, so what they're going to do, say no to it, surely they're going to want a deal, because otherwise we walk away and they don't get a penny.
Exactly.
I mean, they're quite happy for the cancer to be kicked down the road longer and longer, because all the while, I assume we're paying contributions.
Yes, indeed. Although I think what might change their minds as well, though, is the election of all of those Brexit Party MPs who are going to be sitting there like a massive thorn in the side of the whole project, moaning and groaning every single minute of the day and telling them how useless they are.
Yeah, if they don't make a deal with, let's say, Boris Johnson, they could end up having to make a deal one day with Farage.
Yeah.
They really don't want that, I imagine.
No, I wouldn't thought so. They want to get rid of Farage as quickly as possible, but he's come back. So, he's like the proverbial bad penny as far as Brussels is concerned. And I think they would be much happier talking to somebody like Boris Johnson, who might come to them with a kind of slightly chippy attitude. I think Theresa May was too friendly, to be honest.
Yeah, of course, she went there and said, don't worry, I'll keep us in. That's my opinion anyway,
No, listen, Gareth, you're absolutely right. And I think the very point that you're making is a good one, because the bottom line for me about all of the stuff that has gone up to now is that, you know, I've had tweets all day today, some of which I can't just read out because there's so many of them. But at the bottom line is, Theresa May never had her heart in leaving the European Union. She never had her heart in negotiating to leave the European Union. She was never convinced that she would have to do it. She was hopeful that basically she would find herself in this kind of stalemate. She never thought she'd lose her job, obviously. However, the bottom line for me is that Boris Johnson if and when he becomes the Prime Minister, and we'll find out whether he takes another step towards that around about 6 o'clock tonight when the result of the second ballot comes out, what we will know, right, is that Boris Johnson will approach Brussels with a very different agenda, with a very different attitude, and with a very much more of a can-do, no-deal situation. And if he believes that he can get what he wants out of Brussels, then let him do it. And if he then has to fight the Parliament here on it, let him do that as well. But at least you'll know that his heart is in it. At least you'll know that he's doing what he wants to do, rather than being forced to do something he doesn't want to do, which is what Theresa May and what Rory Stewart and what Jeremy Hunt would be doing, because they're all Remainers and they don't want to leave the European Union.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the great dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
You gotta
This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. You know what to do. 0344 499 1000 is the number to talk to. The most balanced show on the radio, and also the place where you hear common sense and you get to speak common sense as well. David has tweeted me Tobias Elwood's voting history, in which it says that he did vote to remain in the European Union, even though his constituency voted 53.69% to leave. He also voted, of course, for Theresa May's EU withdrawal agreement, and in indicative voting, voted for a customs union. So when I said to him, do you wish to stay in the European Union while they control all trade and all tariffs, which we have no control over, he said that's not what he wanted. Well, that's what he voted for. 0344 499 1000. Let's talk about cheese, because David Hartley is the managing director of Wensleydale Creamery. Now, if you ever wanted to talk to anybody on the radio, this would be the guy. David, a very good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Mike.
Wensleydale Creamery just has such a beautiful sound to it. I don't even care what it looks like. It sounds like a great place.
Well, it is. It's in a beautiful part of the world. We're here up in the heart of Wensleydale in the Yorkshire Dales.
God's own country, some people call that, don't they?
Absolutely right, yeah. Beautiful, stunning location, yeah.
Yes. Now, of course, people will say, well, you know, when you say Wensleydale, the first thing you think of is Wallace and Gromit. But I actually happen to really, really like Wensleydale cheese and have liked it even before Wallace and Gromit were around. But an amazing story has emerged where people could actually power their homes as a result of your cheese making.
Indeed, yeah. We've just announced a partnership with a company called Iona Capital Partnership,
right?
Who are about 30 miles away, who've invested a serious sum of money in an anaerobic digestion plant to produce biomethane, which is effectively gas, which goes straight into the gas main and powers many, many homes in the area.
Right.
And the deal that we've done with them is to supply a sort of a sugar-rich permeate, which is a byproduct of our cheese-making process, to them, to the order of about 15,000 tonnes a year.
Wow.
And so we've invested about £1 million here in putting plant and equipment in to extract this product from the whey, which essentially is the key byproduct of cheesemaking.
Yes.
And that's going to be the feedstock for this new plant down the road from here in Wensleydale.
Yeah. And when you talk about sustainable sort of products and energy, I mean, this is purely and simply the most straightforward sustainable energy there can be.
Well, I agree, and we are so proud of what's been achieved here, because, you know, we buy milk from 45 local farmers who are within a pretty tight radius of the creamery. We make it into cheese. As I said, the byproduct is whey. That's then getting fermented and producing green energy, which is so perfect, really, for what we need. It works for the biogas plant because they've got a constant supply. You know, we take milk off farms 365 days a year. We make cheese nearly every day of every week of every year. So the whole sustainability is perpetuated, which is fantastic. The other great news is that the final product that we have from this process is literally pure water. So we start with milk, which is about 85% water, and then we finish up with cheese, whey protein, which is very on topic at the moment, whey permeate, which goes to the anaerobic digestion plant, and then pure water at the end of that. So we're really utilising every part of that raw milk that comes off the farm, and we're doing it in a really green and sustainable way.
Absolutely. And what would have happened to the whey before you'd worked out that you could do this with it? Would it have just gone to sort of waste?
It probably never went to waste, but essentially what used to happen, we used to produce what they call thin whey, which is very, very low solids.
Okay.
A very watery solution, which would have gone to local pig farms around the country.
Right.
And now, you know, over the years, technology's improved a lot. So we have these very sophisticated filtration systems that literally filter out all the best parts of it, whether it's the protein, whether it's the sugar, to get down to water. So you're splitting out all these different fractions, which really would just have gone as a single byproduct many years ago.
Sure. So, and as a consumer, could you then take delivery of this biogas as if it was natural gas, say, for example, and you cancel your gas subscription or whatever? What sort of cost are we talking about to a consumer? Is it the same kind of price?
Well, yes. I mean, what's actually happening from Leeming biogas project down there is it is going straight into the gas main. So they are supplementing...
Oh, okay.
Everybody's
so it can come
normal.
The same. It can use the same delivery system.
It's going straight into the main gas main down there in Leeming Bar, which is near North Allerton. So it's going straight into the gas main as mains gas. So it is no different. It's no alternative. The consumer wouldn't be aware of any change at all. And you know, the plant down there is supplying something like the equivalent of 4,000 homes in the North Yorkshire area.
Blimey. That's
with
brilliant.
This product, which is just essentially everyday gas that people burn in the central heating and hot water systems.
Tremendous. And, I mean, presumably any kind of cheese product could produce this, could it?
Indeed, yeah. You know,
it doesn't
anything,
have to be Wensleydale.
It doesn't have to be Wensleydale, no. I'm sure we're going to produce a better quality gas coming from Yorkshire Wensleydale.
Yes.
But any cheese-making process that is producing whey, which is rich in this lactose solution, the sugar fraction of the milk, is perfect for an anaerobic digestion plant. And so, therefore, I'm sure it is a scheme that will roll out across the country.
I've seen the future. I think this is brilliant. I mean, these are the kind of innovations that I think if we put our minds to it, we can find, can't we? You know, we don't need to do away with cars. We don't need to, you know, if we're heading for this, you know, aim for, you know, zero emissions by 2050. I mean, these are the kinds of ideas which are really long-lasting and brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, it's everything about it. It's sustainability. I mean, we live and operate and work and draw milk from the Yorkshire Dales National Park, which is a phenomenally beautiful part of the world. And,
yeah.
You know, we're all concerned about the environment. And this is just one example of how you actually think about a situation, come up with a solution that actually delivers benefits for all of the people in this supply chain, from farmers right through to consumers who are heating the house. So it's a great thing to be a part of, really. We are delighted.
Well, listen, congratulations, David. It really is brilliant. You should get some kind of award, I think. Managing Director of Wensleydale Creamery, David Hartley. What a great idea. This is what we're all about in this country. We can have great ideas and we can turn them into brilliant solutions to all sorts of things. In this case, producing energy, producing gas, which is like natural gas, but it's made from cheese. It's brilliant, isn't it?
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday on Talk Radio, via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. If you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.